Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
It is the Lake Show, a lovely summer night here in the middle of May in these parts. The problem, rain in Baltimore. The Twins and the Orioles were not able to play game one of that series tonight at Camden Yards. And there's a ton of rain out east. And you look at the weather map, and it's literally going to rain all night from North Carolina up through Virginia and Maryland. And right now, Baltimore getting rain, but to the west of there, there's flood warnings at center. 100% chance of rain tonight. That chance will drop tomorrow. As a result, they're going to try and get in a doubleheader with the lineup card at 10:30 our time. First pitch, game one at 11. Bailey Ober will try and keep the streak going. And then Simeon Woods Richardson will play game two. You'll hear them both. And then, of course, getaway day game on Thursday as well. And there still is a chance of rain in the forecast. And then the Twins head for Milwaukee, and they have a roof there for a weekend series. So, once again, rain in Baltimore. No Twins game tonight. They'll try and play two tomorrow. Right now, we're going to shift gears and talk space flight with Stephen Clark from Ars Technica. Stephen, it's been a while. How are you doing?
Doing fine, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Everyone's kind of waiting for SpaceX to launch that gigantic starship again down in Texas. Two in a row have not gone well, and I would assume the delay is to solve a number of problems with the upper stage or the ship itself. First of all, the booster or super heavy has performed beautifully. It's been the problem with the upper stage. When will it fly again?
Well, right now the indications are that it could fly next week, perhaps as soon as a week from tomorrow, May 21st, according to some warning notices that have gone out to advise ships to steer clear of the track out across the Gulf from South Texas. We're waiting on SpaceX to officially confirm that, and also SpaceX is still waiting for FAA licensing for this next flight. But I expect that to come either at the end of this week or beginning of next week. So things are coming together for the ninth flight of Starship next week. SpaceX test fire the upper stage or the ship, as you mentioned, yesterday down at Starbase in South Texas. And at this point, they're putting the final touches on the vehicle. They've rolled the booster out to the launch pad, and soon the ship will go to the launch pad and be stacked on top of it. They'll run some tests and hopefully launch next week. And, you know, this is a critical test flight because SpaceX really, with Starship, these last two test flights in January and March, the upper stage failed in a similar way. Just before reaching its planned trajectory, it was late in the burn to get into space, and the engines cut off, and the vehicle lost control, and spread debris out across the Bahamas and the Turks and Caicos, out mostly at sea, thankfully not over land, but some fell on land at the Turks and Caicos and some of the islands there. And this next flight, I wouldn't say a lot's riding on it, because SpaceX, obviously, Elon Musk has a very deep pocket. So if it goes wrong again, they can fix it and try again. But SpaceX wants to start flying these more often. And potentially, they just got FAA approval earlier this or last week, rather, to fly up to 25 times per year. They're currently capped at 5 flights per year. So that's kind of where they want to get to. And in order for that flight rate to realize itself, they have to get a successful flight in next week, and you know they can't go back to the drawing board again and wait 2 or 3 months for the next flight. So, you know, it's an important flight, and this is really the most significant setback that SpaceX has had in any of its rocket or space programs in almost a decade with these two back-to-back Starship failures. But SpaceX is much more financially solvent. Elon Musk has a lot more money than he had a decade ago, so they're going to keep plugging.
Yeah, and they have so much going on and so much business on their Falcon 9 workhorse that the launches, as they continue to build their Starlink low-level satellite constellation to provide internet, and then I would assume at some point a cellular phone service or some sort of service like that through those satellites, that they are almost footnotes now. Oh, they launched another rocket, and they landed the first stage on a barge or back on land, and everything went fine. But this is a quantum leap, if you will, in the size of the rocket and the fact that it is ideally 100% usable. Now, Stephen, they had some test launches before the failures of Ship and were pretty pleased. They were able to get most of the way around the Earth and actually bring the ship through the atmosphere again and land it. Is it a design change? What has changed that caused these last two failures? What do we know?
Yes, Steve. So these last two failures in January and March, these were the first two flights of an upgraded design of the ship. So SpaceX calls it version 2 or block 2 redesign of the ship with supposedly it has improvements. It carries more propellant. They've redesigned some flaps to give it more aerodynamic stability. They have improved the heat shield for it to be able to survive reentry better. And then notably, I think related to what's causing the failures, is they've redesigned parts of the propulsion system, including the big lines. These are big propellant feed lines that flow liquid oxygen and liquid methane at cryogenic temperatures. These lines are a foot in diameter or more, going from the propellant tanks down to the 6 engines at the bottom of the ship. And they've redesigned how those lines are routed through the propulsion system. They've simplified it to make it easier to manufacture. And they've added some jacketing around the lines to improve insulation. But all of that, that has a purpose to improve the performance of the rocket, but something in that appears to be causing fuel leaks, propellant leaks during the flight. And the rocket in January, we know the investigation concluded that there was a propellant leak that caused some fires in the engine compartment, and that eventually led to engine failures and then a loss of control. We haven't seen the official report from what happened on the March flight, but it failed in a very similar way. I wouldn't be surprised if it had come to a similar so-called proximate cause of the failure. However, the root cause of the failure, I think, is I'm curious to see what SpaceX concludes in this investigation in the coming days. Once they release the summary, the results of that, because in January they concluded that the resonance of the entire rocket, basically the engines, create a lot of shaking, a lot of vibrations.
Oh,
and
sure.
Those were in tune with the resonance of the entire structure of the rocket that kind of amplified those vibrations and led to a break in the fuel flow system. And they redesigned parts of the rocket before the March flight. They made some changes, failed again. So maybe they didn't have the root cause correct, or maybe they didn't fix the right thing. So I'm really eager to see in the next few days what SpaceX says once they release the results of the investigation.
And then ultimately they fly again, so there is a lot riding on it, but they'll continue to fly. I mean, their track record is that, you know, if you first don't succeed, try again. And they build it, they fly it, they fix it, and they move on. But there is also these ambitious goals of part of the Artemis program to assist putting humans back on the moon, and then ultimately trips to Mars. And here we are in May, and I know things can change, and they have a successful flight or two under their belt, and they're back on track. But if this flight is...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
A failure or a ship doesn't do the things they want it to do, that, you know, it's kind of back to the drawing board, and all of those other plans get pushed out even further.
Yeah, you know, if this one fails again, I suspect they won't be able to launch again until, you know, late summer, perhaps, or fall. If it goes well, I wouldn't be surprised if they launch again in June, to be honest with you. So that's the kind of, you know, a few months of difference in the schedule will be the consequence of the outcome of the flight next week. And one thing, you know, I've thought about, if this flight goes poorly, you know, this is the version 2 of the Starship. SpaceX is well into the design and development of version 3 of Starship, which is the version that they're going to make operational, basically, to actually, you know, land on the moon, to have refueling tankers, to create this entire ecosystem of starships doing, you know, as tankers, as satellite deployers, as moon landers, as Mars landers. They're going to have different versions of this vehicle to do all those things. Well, that's based on the next version, Block 3 of the ship. And it wouldn't shock me, actually, if version 2 fails again this month, that SpaceX may just accelerate version 3 and try to get that on the launch pad as soon as possible.
We have much more coming up. We'll talk about the future of the Artemis program and the Space Launch System. We'll also talk about some Soviet-era space junk as well. All of this coming up with Stephen Clark. He's joining us from Ars Technica here on News Talk 830-WC. Stephen Clark joining us, Ars Technica. He covers space flight. We talked a great deal about Starship and Test Flight 9 could be coming up very soon, and quite a sight. I'd love to get down there and see one of these things. One thing we can say before we move on, Stephen, they seem to have the super heavy booster, or that first stage, pretty much figured out. It launches, they've been able to bring it back to the pad and catch it with the chopstick arms. I mean, that alone is worth the price of admission. I mean, they're literally launching a building and bringing it back.
Yeah, it's an amazing sight to see. I've been down there. I was down there last October for the very first time that they recovered and caught the Super Heavy booster back on the launch pad, and it was one of the most incredible, exciting things I've ever seen in person. And I hope to go back actually next week for the flight again and see that with my own eyes once more. So it is an incredible thing to behold. And, of course, this is the largest rocket in the world, 400 feet tall. and the largest rocket ever built. The first stage has 33 engines. The upper stage has 6 engines. So, you know, a layman's assessment would maybe suggest that the first stage with 33 engines is more complicated. And, you know, there are caveats to that because the ship does have a different purpose. And it needs to go all the way into space and into orbit, ultimately. But the booster is an incredibly complex piece of machinery. It's it by itself is almost 25 stories tall. And you know, it's coming back at several times the speed of sound, and kind of slams on the brakes by reigniting some of its engines to slow down and be caught by the launch tower. One thing I'll note is the flight next week, Flight 9, will actually be reusing one of the Super Heavy boosters that flew previously back in January. So we mentioned that the test flights, quote-unquote, failed in January and March. Well, the booster performed nearly flawlessly on both of those flights. You know, the ship, the upper stage, was the problem. And the Super Heavy booster that launched and was caught by the tower, you know, recovered at Starbase in January, will fly again next week on Starship's 9th flight. And, you know, it took... We're a little more than 2 years from the very first flight of Starship back in 2023, and it took about 7 years for SpaceX to actually reuse a Falcon 9 booster with its workhorse rocket. It took 7 years. This will happen in 2 years, and that's pretty remarkable. It's much more complicated than the Falcon 9, and we're making great progress with the booster.
Yeah, it is quite a sight to see. The videos are hard to take your eyes off. I can't imagine to be down there and see it live. You had a piece a few days back. By the way, Stephen Clark joins us from RS Technicon, the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline here on CCO, about a Soviet-era spacecraft built to land on Venus coming back to Earth. I love the photo as part of that story. It says CCP, like something out of a James Bond movie. It's really cool and a great story.
Yes. This was really interesting and a fun story to research and to write. This spacecraft launched in 1972. It was supposed to go to Venus, as you mentioned. They had a rocket failure, the Soviet Union did, that stranded it in orbit around the Earth. It was not able to leave Earth. It was stuck in orbit. And it's been in that orbit for 53 years now. And then last Saturday morning, it finally reentered the atmosphere. Yeah. And the notable thing about this, aside from it just being in space for so long and being kind of a relic from the Cold War, is that this capsule, because it was going to go to Venus, actually had a heat shield on it. This capsule was about a half ton or so in mass. It was about 3 to 4 feet in diameter. It's kind of spherical in shape, and it had the heat shield to survive entry into the atmosphere of Venus. Well, that means that theoretically it would have survived re-entry into Earth's atmosphere, which is actually thinner than Venus's. So the temperatures theoretically would be not as extreme. So there was a really good chance that this capsule would actually reach the Earth's surface in one piece, intact. That would have been highly unusual for, you know, when satellites reenter, typically they burn up, they break apart. Some debris may survive and reach the Earth, but they're small fragments. And this thing was, you know, expected to come down in one piece, and it could have come down in land or over the ocean. Of course, 70% of our surface is ocean. So ultimately, the analysis from the Space Force and from Russia's Space Agency and the European Space Agency all agreed that it ended up reentering the atmosphere over the Indian Ocean, kind of west of Malaysia, and likely fell into the sea, probably intact. It fell on land intact, you know, it would have been falling at terminal velocity, you know, a couple hundred miles an hour. I don't know the exact speed, but it would have definitely cratered into the ground. You know, a part of me kind of wishes it had fallen on land away from population, obviously, so it wouldn't harm any property or people. But I would have loved to have seen the debris and what it looked like after so long in space. But alas, it's probably at the bottom of the Indian Ocean now.
Yeah, quite a story for sure. Last time we visited, we did kind of a deep dive, and we certainly don't have the time to do it. But every administration, every presidential administration, these big programs of NASA can be on the chopping block. And ever since President Trump was sworn in, you know, we've wondered aloud, will the Artemis program, will the Space Launch System, as it's currently configured, survive? And really, we still don't know for sure, but they've already got a lot of hardware paid for. Some of that will fly, but over the long haul, probably not. That at some point, this program will go the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah, Steve, you know, we've talked about this a lot. I've thought, certainly for the last couple of years, that it's inevitable that the Space Launch System will go away and be canceled. The only question was when. Well, the Trump administration is now proposing to fly the Space Launch System two more times on the missions they call Artemis 2 and Artemis 3. Artemis 2 could launch early next year, potentially. It'll carry four astronauts around the moon, around the far side of the moon, and back to Earth. That'll be the first time anyone's gone out to the moon or the vicinity of the moon in more than 50 years. And then Artemis 3 will actually attempt that first moon landing since Apollo. After that, the plan proposed by the Trump administration is to cancel the Space Launch System, to cancel the Orion spacecraft that is launched on top of it, and seek commercial options for transporting crew to the moon in the future. And there's a big emphasis in the Trump budget proposal, the blueprint that we have. We don't have the details yet, but there's an emphasis on going to Mars. It talks a lot about going to Mars, a lot more about going to Mars than going to the moon. And the focus, really, since the first Trump administration, less than 10 years ago, about 8 years ago now, proposed basically going back to the moon and having what they call a sustained presence at the moon, a base either in orbit or on the lunar surface that will be crewed long-term, you know, sort of like the International Space Station is. Well, in Trump administration number two, that the focus really has gone completely toward Mars, which aligns with Elon Musk's long-standing ambition to send people to Mars and to create a settlement on Mars. And, you know, the moon is we'll see. There's a lot of support in the Senate and in the House from lawmakers, especially those that represent key districts in Texas and Alabama and Florida, for keeping, if not the Space Launch System alive, at least keeping a focus on the moon in the near term, let's say for the next 10 to 15 years, whereas the Trump administration really isn't clear on how long it would hang around the moon before trying to press on to Mars. So that's going to be something that's going to be debated over the coming months, I think, and we'll see where Congress comes out. But I suspect the Space Launch System is done after the next two flights. The only question is, do they keep focusing on the moon or do they pivot to Mars immediately?
Yeah, and certainly with someone who appears to have a great deal of influence, Elon Musk and SpaceX has said the goal all along, everything they're doing at SpaceX and even with Starlink to fund all of this is to get humans to Mars.
Yes, exactly. And they've even studied, speaking of Starlink, one thing I'll mention is they've studied using Starlink at Mars. They haven't done it yet, but they've done some research on it. They had a contract with NASA for a study of how they could use Starlink at Mars to communicate between a base on Mars and back to Earth. So all of this, is really geared toward Mars.
Well, Stephen, I enjoy your work. I read all of it, and I'm so glad when you can join us here on the radio.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate the invitation.
Stephen Clark, Ars Technica, he covers space flight. Always great updates. So Starship may fly again, and that'll be a big one. Can they get ship back into what is close to Earth orbit and prove that this system does indeed work? It'll be a big one. Quite a show. 8:32.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.